Monday, we will remember the 23 people who tragically lost their lives as a result of the Munich air disaster, including 8 of our Busby babes. Jeff Bent, Roger Byrne, Eddie Coleman, Duncan Edwards, Mark Jones, David Pegg, Tommy Taylor, Liam Whelan.
Controlled, dominant and exciting Manchester United display unravelled before our very eyes after Casemiro sending off, and yet the result remained intact. Against the very opposition this side had gifted away a valuable 2 points less than a month ago, the Reds held out, a relentless display of grit and determination in trying circumstances. What had looked like a comfortable home victory against out-of-form lesser opposition instead now represents an impressive test of character. United, the victors over Crystal Palace. And that belief thing, well, it just keeps on growing. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Thank you for joining me, Harry Robinson and Jack Tate. We'll jump into our review of the Palace game very shortly, and in the rest of the show, we'll have a detailed preview of our rearranged home game against Leeds on Wednesday night. Leeds having just sacked their manager, Jesse Marsh, just before we record this. We'll play Guess the Player throughout. You'll get your regular extensive youth loan and United Women roundup. And our patrons will get a bonus Q&A in the middle of the show, as well as ad-free early release episodes for as little as a £1.50 fee per month. Let's start with one thing, Jack.
Because they can could play football.
Ten Hag is absolutely right. This side can play fucking good football. The second goal, I think, is where I want to start, because there's plenty more to discuss. But before we get caught up in VR and Reds and grit and Lisandro Martinez, United's second goal against Palace, having got a nice fortunate penalty early on to make things calm and put us in front and make things fairly relaxed. The second goal was just brilliant to watch. Brilliantly well worked, and possibly the best, how do I phrase this? The best goal in terms of Ten Hag's style of play that we expected from seeing his Ajax teams coming through at Manchester United.
Yeah, I think it's right up there with Antony's goal against Arsenal at home earlier in the season. I think those two are the goals that stand out to me as the ones that really put into practice a lot of what we expected and what we expect to see more of from Ten Hag's Man United going forward. 9 outfield players, Varane was the only one that didn't touch the ball, were involved in the build-up to Rashford's goal. We worked it across the pitch. It starts from a throw-in in the right-back area. Fred gets it from the throw-in out to Martinez. We work it across to the left wing. It goes out to the right wing. Wan-Bissaka was also heavily involved in this goal and in part of it in sort of a central midfield role. Again, showing this kind of tactical flexibility that United are gaining more and more. You know, it's just the speed that we move the ball on the edge of the box, I think, is just as a general point, the key to breaking down deep blocks, which Palace were playing at that point. And I think it's the thing that United have struggled the most with over the last 3 or 4 years when we've struggled to break down deep blocks. You know, how many times have we come on this podcast and said it was too slow? We didn't pull defenders out of position. Our movement wasn't good enough. You know, everything from the time that Antony plays the ball to Bruno Fernandes until it goes into Garnacho, everything was one or two touch. I think it was Antony into Fernandes, into Wan-Bissaka. It was all one touch. Wan-Bissaka was two touches. Casemiro was first time into Garnacho. And then Garnacho dribbles across the box and Shaw's crosses first time. You know, that is the way to beat teams that are sitting back. You pull defenders out of position, you move the ball quickly. And that was that down to a T.
And Garnacho's role is particularly notable, because in that moment, I think Garnacho of a couple of months ago, and possibly all of United's players a few months ago, would have taken that left-footed shot as he walked across or jogged across the penalty area, but instead found that extra pass to Shaw, who then got the cross to Rashford. And it's fairly easy to describe, isn't it? But to create football like that, is very difficult. And we spoke in our Ten Hag review about 10 or 12 episodes ago now, which seems a long time ago, as we were reviewing him at the end of November and the work he'd done at United so far. We spoke about how impressed we were with the development of character and the defence at United, but we were waiting to see this attacking identity come through. And I don't think we were expecting it to come as quickly as November. So we weren't, I don't think we were worried about that. We were just saying that's what we hoped for the second half of the season. The other thing we hoped for was to win games by more than one goal. That wasn't the case on Saturday, but we've seen that a lot more recently. And this is kind of the second stage. And I think it represents an overall, especially the last few weeks. I don't know about you, but I get the sense watching this really, the last few weeks have felt like a real improvement, not necessarily results because they were going well anyway, but in both how United play in and out of possession, you're thinking, wow, not only am I enjoying this, but I'm really noticing differences now. And that's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, no, not only noticing differences, but noticing differences in, I think, areas where even throughout Ten Hag's time so far, there's clearly been deficiencies and struggles for United. I think earlier on in the season, we talked a lot about how United are really good in attacking transitions and really bad in defensive transitions. And a lot of our goals earlier in the season came from attacking transitions. Even when they were great goals, they often came from when we've just won the ball back, rather than us being able to keep the ball for long periods of time in really structured attacks and break teams down. I think that's why we raved so much about the Antony goal against Arsenal at the time, because it was so different to pretty much any other goal that we had scored at that point in the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a work in progress, obviously, but even when they aren't leading to goals, it feels like this United team are starting to develop a lot in terms of how we're able to A, control games, but B, and more importantly, able to break teams down and create good chances for ourselves, even when they are trying to shut space down, keep a relatively deep block. You know, it's something we haven't had a good skill set at for a number of years, and it will take time to keep getting better at it, but we are starting to show a bit more tactical flexibility. You mentioned Garnacho coming inside. You know, he was started that attack out on the left wing, ended up picking up the ball on the right side of the penalty box. Wan-Bissaka was playing almost as a central midfielder at that point. Casemiro is in what is sort of a traditional number 10 kind of role, where when he picks up the ball and plays into Garnacho. So we're starting to see this United team open up a little bit. Like I said, a little bit more positional flexibility, especially when we have the ball. But you know, it's good signs for United for going forward that, you know, this we've talked a lot about this kind of dichotomy between Ten Hag's more pragmatic approach that he's had so far this season, and at some point we will kind of switch to this more expansive, kind of more in the mold of his Ajax team. That's not going to be an overnight thing. You know, it's not like we're going to watch United one day and think, yes, this is the switch. It's going to take time, and I think we're clearly nowhere near the finished article yet, but I think we're starting to see a few shoots of those kind of principles being introduced to the way that we're playing.
No, yeah, it's the result of a lot of work on the training ground, and I think probably also a result of how much this team has played together, at least the key players in this team has played together. We'll talk about rotation later, particularly in the Patreon Q&A, because we have a question about it or the lack of it under Ten Hag so far. But the benefit of rotating your key players, the core of your team, very little, is that this kind of thing can probably progress a little quicker than it would were you switching team every week, or switching five or six players every week to benefit fitness levels. I liked how Ten Hag also called it a tribute to the football played by the Busby Babes after a poignant pre-match. A few minutes of remembrance, flowing attacking football finished off by an academy graduate and involving another in Garnacho. It was, yeah, I liked how Ten Hag noticed that. I've just been watching the Munich Memorial Service, and he was there as well with loads of representatives, including Harry Maguire and Katie Zellerman, Mark Skinner as well. We best move on to the other key matter of the game, the scrap. Antony shoved into the advertising audience by Jeffrey Schlupp, who then scored Palace's goal after United went down to 10 because Casemiro was sent off. At the time, well, let's discuss the actual red card itself first. I think it's fair. I think it could be definitely argued and should be argued that others should have got yellow or reds, but I don't think you can put your hands on someone's neck, and Casemiro's the experienced leader of this team and should know better, really. I do think getting involved is great, and it's the kind of thing we've been crying out for years. So it's a very fine margins, and in terms of stepping over the line, he's only just gone over it. But it is What do you think a red was fair? Because you have more refereeing expertise than I do.
Yeah, I do. I understand why there's some angst about it, I guess, because I don't think what Casemiro was doing was, I don't think he was trying to strangle Will Hughes or
it wasn't
him.
Violent, was it?
Right, exactly. And the fact that it goes down as violent conduct probably doesn't help that fact, but
yeah.
I don't care if you're literally just going up to give someone a hug. You can't grab a player around their neck.
I think the angle that made, so I was baffled by this post-match when I had very little signal on my phone. I couldn't load any proper videos of it. And I just fleetingly saw a few tweets saying, how's that a red? And people justifying it. And just thought, to be honest, you've just got to be more sensible there. But the only angle that did make me rethink it a bit when I saw it the next day was the video from a fan in the stands just next to it, where you see Casemiro grab his shirt rather than his neck. And you think, okay, it looks bad, but should they have been looking at angles that showed that instead? Was he just grabbing the collars of his shirt rather than his neck itself? Because in that case, I think it's a much harder decision to make. But I haven't really got that many complaints over it. The silver lining, of course, is that he'll be well rested for the Barcelona double and League Cup final, and he can put all of his focus on that. He will be missed against Leeds, particularly away from home. I think what's crucial to the whole discussion is it's the mentality that saw so many United players go in there and get stuck in, which we then saw even without Casemiro on the pitch for the remaining 20 to 25 minutes. And that's the attitude and mentality that got us over the line in terms of the result.
Yeah, it was, I mean, the game switched so quickly after a red card, which can obviously happen. But I think before getting on to the good stuff, I was a bit disappointed with how quickly we let things get out of control.
And how
it felt like almost...
And I would say how long it took to make changes from a Ten Hag point of view as well. Yeah. I was very surprised. I think it was about 12 minutes in the end. There was just a sense of, we've lost the midfielder here. When is the change going to come? And then Palace scored and you thought, oh God, this could be too late. And there's a couple of times, I can't remember the examples now, but there's been a couple of times this season when Ten Hag's, might have been City actually, is one I can remember, where City suddenly started to assert a bit of dominance and he was waiting to make the change, and the change literally came, I think, a minute after City's goal, and he just thought, it's too late there. You've let the game get away from you. And I felt we did that with Palace as well.
Yeah, City, you're right. And I felt it happened against Arsenal as well at the Emirates a couple of weeks ago.
It was
70 minutes when Casemiro got sent off. It was 81 when we brought on Sabitzer, 76 when Palace scored. So even after the goal went in, we still left it 5 minutes before making a change after that. I was disappointed with how, you obviously knew at that point that at the end of the game, we were obviously going to lose a lot of our control and we probably were going to have to defend, you know, kind of all hands on deck, kind of defending towards the end of the game. But I was disappointed how quickly it turned into that. Even before the goal, you know, the first 5 or 6 minutes, Palace were all over us. Yeah, we were a man down, but, you know, we still have good players on the pitch. To quote Ten Hag, we're still fucking good at football. You know, we could easily have still maintained some amount of control in that game. Having said that, I think once that first goal went in from Palace, the defending was very, very good. I mean, Martinez, it was just heroic at times, you know, with the amount of, and even before that, to be fair, he was very, very good in the game. I actually thought Sabitzer came on and it was obviously a weird moment for him to come on, but I thought he did quite well. Yeah. A couple of nice breakups and I can't believe the ref gave a foul in midfield when he played Rashford and we had a 2-on-1.
Yeah, Rashford, the ref seemed to,
I don't know who it was.
I think there were some poor decisions before, but only in kind of a regular sense before the red card. And I don't really have any complaints about the red card, but afterwards, decisions seem to get stranger and stranger. And not just against United. I thought there were a couple of quite soft fouls that he gave United that he wasn't given earlier in the game. And you thought, has he just lost a little bit of composure here? And I wouldn't be entirely surprised if he had, because it was a big decision to make and the atmosphere was very intense after that. Martinez was amazing. And I think we're just absolutely in love with the man. He's just absolutely brilliant. And completely the perfect centre-back. And the perfect character in the team. When for a player as big in performance and attitude as Casemiro to go off, you want someone else to be able to step up and fill that void. And Martinez did that fantastically. The block for, I can't remember who it was, but one of the blocks was just brilliant. And yeah, it's a very weird coming on. I thought the least you can ask for from someone on their debut is intensity and energy. And that's not beyond your first couple of games, you need a lot more than that. But I think that's all you can really ask for. And I think he did more than that. Not only did he bring that immediately, but his reading of the game was excellent and helped stop, from memory, two good chances, probably more.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, like you said, you can't really read too much into anything that he put out there. But I thought, yeah, he broke up play quite well on a couple of occasions. Like I mentioned before, there was that one where he did brilliantly to dispossess. I don't actually know who it was in midfield. It might have been Decore. But he dispossessed him, looked like a great tackle, and then played a nice ball around the corner into Rashford. And we had a 2-on-1 going through on goal. And Andre Mariner somehow brought it back. Palace weren't even appealing for a foul, which was, it was a baffling decision. But we're obviously going to see more of Sabitzer now over the next few games. It's an interesting one for United with the Casemiro red card as well, because it feels like one that we may have appealed ordinarily, but if you appeal, there's a chance it gets extended by a game and covers the League Cup final. So I definitely don't think we'll be seeing that. And to be fair, it wouldn't have got overturned.
I think because of that, we won't appeal. Let's have the first guest to play a clue, and then we'll talk a little bit about how the game changed either side of the red card, because I think there were some really positive things before the red card, and we'll get onto that. Your first clue, this is me setting you. There'll be three clues throughout the show for those of you who've forgotten or are listening for the first time. If so, a very warm welcome, especially to you if you're listening for the first time. Three clues, the quicker you get it, the better you, the more points you get. And it's always a United player, ex-player, or staff member, or ex-staff member, or someone linked to the club. And your first clue, Jack, with me setting them this week for you, is I scored 2 goals on my Manchester United debut, and that's all you're having.
Jeez.
I would assume you don't want to make a risky guess immediately.
No, I mean, the only player that ever comes to mind really is Rashford, but I feel like if you were going to give me something about Rashford, you'd give me a much harder clue than that, because he's so top of mind.
You don't think I'd give you a double bluff, a red herring, send you on a...
Well, I hope not. Maybe you would now that you've said that. I'm trying to think who else even sort of comes to mind.
I'll let you mull it over while we talk about this. Before the red card, I think is worth talking about, because we controlled the game very well. And I think we spoke earlier about the progression in terms of that attacking identity is what I said earlier. It's not exactly the right word. Just those moments where you think, wow, I'm really seeing a different quality in terms of the way that United can drag defences apart here. The other thing I've seen over the last few weeks, and I think I've seen this to a much, much greater extent, and I'm massively enthused by it. Since the return from the World Cup, I think the key progress has been how United win the ball back. Those seconds after losing it is where we're seeing United press with such high intensity. Because I think we've all seen, both with our eyes and statistically, that United are not mimicking, for example, the early Liverpool team of Jurgen Klopp. We're not hounding teams. It's not gegenpressing. We're controlling possession. And now when we lose it, the press in those transitional moments is so intense and becoming increasingly intense and increasingly successful. And I think that links back to the earlier season thing we saw since the Liverpool game with the mentality. But it's also awareness, that positional awareness, the level of training you need to know when to commit and when not to. We're making those mistakes much, much less frequently. Who covers where when someone does commit? And I think it's probably the main sign of progress in this team, at least in the last couple of months. And it makes United an intense team that the support in Old Trafford then responds to. And that's just a wonderful, virtuous circle.
It's not necessarily been that I don't think we're pressing that much higher up the pitch or that much more intensely as a matter of course. I think the difference for me has been how quickly we look to win the ball back after losing
it. It's those moments. It's about 3 or 4 seconds after you lose it. And that's... And the thing you're seeing is that's why Nottingham Forest at home, these are 2 games I remember most, but there have been others, but there's just so many, they all blur into one beyond the last week or two. Nottingham Forest at home in the League Cup, the second leg. Yes, kind of unique circumstances in that we went into the game 3-0 up, but that game and the first 70 minutes of the Palace game, especially the first half, the intensity of that kind of transitional press, then you keep teams penned in. And that's something United have been just, when we have done it, we've just looked so unlike scoring. It's been when teams want to sit back and they let us cross 84 times or however many times it was in the David Moyes game against Fulham. It's never been to quite to that extreme since that Moyes game. But there have been plenty of examples that have come close where teams sit back and it looks like we're possession, but that's because we're being allowed to. This is now the other team are winning the ball back and we're just pushing them back again and again. And that's so difficult to defend against. And it's why eventually almost every team crumbled in the face of Pep Guardiola's City when they're at their very best, which they're not quite at the moment, but they still have success in this format. And United are starting to get that. And the second goal against Palace is a perfect example of that.
I'm a big believer that at this level, if you let any team attack you pretty much non-stop for any amount of time in the Premier League, you're going to concede. I think that whenever United play the likes of Arsenal or City recently, it frustrates me when you can't get out at all because a goal feels so inevitable. And United are starting to develop that side of their game. You're right, the first 70 minutes against Palace, and it was the same against Forest in the Cup. It was the same against Reading in the FA Cup before that as well. And it's even been a shift since the first few games after the World Cup. This isn't something I don't think that we've seen constantly since the end of December or start of January. For me, it's really been the last like week or two, is how quickly we're looking to win the ball back. And it, like you said, it helps you keep teams penned in. And with the quality that United have on the pitch, if we're basically constantly attacking for, you know, 45, 60, 50, 60 minutes, we're going to score goals. We have that kind of quality in our team. And especially with the way that we're starting to develop, breaking down those kind of deep blocks, we are going to be a very dangerous team. It's been really noticeable to me, and it was really noticeable in the first half against Palace in particular. I thought, you know, Fred and Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes, Antony, those are the ones that really stood out to me, that just the work that we were putting in, and Weghorst actually, who had a quiet game in general, but those players in particular really stood out to me as just working so, so hard in those first few seconds to win the ball back. After the first Palace, the first like minute had quite a lot of the ball, but honestly, after that, until about 25 minutes,
yeah,
they barely got out of their own half. We kept them penned in to a degree that I can't really remember from a United team very often at all in the last 5 years.
Absolutely, and it's just
the other thing. Sorry, just to add is that the big risk of doing this is that if you commit three or four men around one player to win the ball back straight away, and then you lose it, or if you sort of make a tackle and get unlucky with the bounce and it ends up ricocheting to a Palace player, you know, you're massively short in defence. And two things. One, they didn't happen very often against Palace, so we did really well to actually win the ball back when we did commit players, or we fouled them, which is a big part of doing this, is that you have to be okay with making those tactical fouls. But then the second one as well is when you've got players like Lisandro Martinez and Rafa Varane, centre-back, you know, you have so much more confidence to do that. Even in the second half, before Casemiro's red card, so many times Martinez in particular was sweeping up brilliantly at the back when they were trying to play balls forward into Edouard. You know, one time Edouard did get in down kind of the left channel, Martinez tackles him out, I think won the ball back, didn't even go out for the corner. You know, having players like that over someone like Harry Maguire, and again, that's not really to say that, you know, Maguire is terrible. It's just playing that kind of style is not his game, because you're going to necessarily be leaving these centre-backs in a lot of isolated space with a lot of ground to cover and relying on them to probably win some one-on-one battles if we don't win that ball back in the first 3 or 4 seconds. And Martinez and Varane are exceptional at doing that.
Yeah, they're brilliant. And after the Reds, they're just there to do more and more. And I think, yeah, we saw similar intensity in terms of winning the ball back in certain moments, but it became much harder. And you mentioned this a bit's example earlier with the stupid free kick that shouldn't have been given. But there were other examples like that where we almost managed to get out. There were a couple of balls to Garnacho that weren't quite right. There was a couple from Wan-Bissaka and a couple from Fred, actually, whose performance kind of declined after Casemiro went off, not entirely surprisingly. But a couple of moments where United did manage to win the ball back and could have got out and announced the counter-attack and never really managed to do it effectively. Those passes out weren't good enough, which was a disappointment, something to work on. But yeah, those individual performances, especially Martinez, Sabitzer are very good. But in general, also, I think that there were a couple of moments where we relied on Martinez's individual quality, but we did in general limit them to crosses, which isn't perfect, but it's better than what we've seen from United in the past. And the cliche of this game would be those are points we would have dropped in the past, and it's absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, but realistically, you only have to go back, what,
1 month,
2 weeks?
3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly, to the Palace game at Selhurst Park. You know, it was a very similar situation. A little bit different in that it wasn't quite as much sort of all hands on deck, but very similar in that we were under a lot of pressure. And I mean, I don't think we defended terribly that game, but it felt, even before Olise's goal, we were living a little bit more on the edge than it felt like we were. There was like one other decent chance that I can remember Palace having other than the goal. I think it was a crossing where Martinez got a block on it, really good block, and then it fell to, was it Mateta's feet? I'm not sure. Also, one thing that really I really noticed as well is, despite all of the hoo-ha about Martinez's height, he does so well for a player of his height in aerial battles. There was one...
You can forget right the height, the he does so well for post. A player of any height. He just is good in the air.
Yeah.
Simple
yeah,
but fact.
It just makes it... It's quite kind of elevates how good he is. There was one right at the end, I think it was like the 94th minute or something. There was a cross came in, it got looped up and then got headed back across goal. And Martinez was up against Mateta. Mateta's what, like 6'3", 6'4"? He's a big, big player. And Martinez does so well, ends up jumping to basically the same height as Mateta. And then he gets a flick on it and ends up coming off Mateta's head and going out for a goal kick. Like, that is the kind of area where we were all slightly worried. And at the start of the season, we had, you know, people like Thomas Frank saying they were targeting Martinez's height. That isn't happening anymore.
I would love to have our final note of this match review section on Lisandro Martinez. But in terms of the bigger picture, this was a really good and important win. And the Old Trafford form is just brilliant. Yeah. I can't remember. Is it 12 wins in a row, Old Trafford? Might
12
be 13.
In a row. Yeah.
Yeah. Just brilliant. And me, I think after the Forest game, me and my brother came away from the ground after a couple of hours and said, we were kind of had deja vu of walking away from Old Trafford the season before, thinking we used to come away from every game last season and work out whether United had won more than half of the games we'd seen them play that season. And that number and percentage of wins slowly started getting lower and lower as the season went on. And this season, we've barely seen them lose a game. It's just, football's great, isn't it? changes so much. Yeah. Right, let's have a guest and player clue two, and then we're going to go into our bonus patron Q&A with questions on Casemiro's red card, on Martinez's height that we've just mentioned briefly, on Ten Hag's rotation, and on Fred. But your second guest and player clue, with your first having been I scored twice on my debut for Manchester United, your second clue is I recently helped Port Vale to League One playoff glory at Wembley.
Okay, so then let me try to narrow this down. So if he's still playing, he's playing for Port Vale. It's probably someone that came to the academy and never made it at United. Okay, so the players in my head is James Wilson, but I can't remember, was he, because didn't he score twice on the final day or the final home game in 2014 when Giggs took charge after Moyes left? I know he scored twice that day, but I can't remember if that was that his full debut.
He did,
not.
Yeah.
It makes too much sense to me. I'm going to guess James Wilson.
Yes, you're absolutely right. James Wilson.
Was it? Nice.
Who scored four goals for Man United in total. Two on his debut. Yeah, Ryan Giggs brought him in as interim manager. We beat Hull 3-1 and things looked very good. And then I think we ended the season with a 1-1 draw at Sunderland, I think. Or maybe Southampton. I can't remember. But yeah, Wilson then...
God,
I mean,
that's
he did
such
play.
A weird period in United's history.
Yeah, he did have he had about a season. I think he played about 30 times for United. No, 20 times, but still respectable. And he's built a good career for himself now, which is good.
Was he at another club before Port Vale? Permanently? Yeah, because so I know he obviously went out on loan a few times.
Yeah, so the last clue would have been, I was at United for more than 15 years and left the club after loans in the Premier League, Championship and Scottish Premiership. He was at Brighton, Sheffield United. There was one other Championship club, which has just slipped my mind, and Aberdeen. And then he moved to Aberdeen permanently, then to Salford City, and then to Port Vale.
Oh, it was Salford. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's moved up a level from Salford to Port Vale. But yeah, let's dive into our Patreon Q&A. Some interesting questions. And for our regular listeners, we'll see you after this short break.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we're back from our Patreon Q&A. Some interesting discussions, especially on rotation and Erik ten Hag's lack thereof and whether that's a positive or not. If you want to sign up to become a patron and hear that every week, you can do so. If you go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod, POD at the end there, and you'll find a link on with information and how to do that for as little as £1.50 a month. Let's talk about the youth teams, the Lonies and United Women. There was no under-21s game this weekend, but the under-18s did play. Derby County away from home, missing a load of key players, and the first half was poor. It looked like they were missing players. And after conceding to Dejon Brown's goal, matters got worse when Eli Harrison, who's in form, very talented goalkeeper, he was taken off injured. Things did improve after the break significantly. Victor Musa finished off a wonderful team move with a 78th minute back post tap-in. United then looked likely to get a winner as the final whistle approached, but it wasn't quite to be. There's a lot of injuries, but that's 9 games unbeaten now in the league. It's very good, given the absentees, a mixture of injuries, players out on loan or promoted to under-21s due to others going out on loan. Sonny Aljafri and Dan Gore represented the boys' academy at Monday afternoon's Munich Memorial Service, and the club's under-13 side travelled to Munich to attend the service there and represent the club, including doing an education session with, I think, with Bayern Munich's youngsters, telling them about the Munich air disaster, which is a lovely thing the club do each year. And yeah, very, very worthwhile. Jack, what's the Loney headlines this week?
There wasn't too much in the way of notable action, honestly, for United's Loneys this weekend.
No Ahmad goals this week?
No Ahmad goals this week. He did play another 90 minutes for Sunderland against Millwall.
That is, it's fair enough. He's been stealing the headlines for far too many weeks now.
And in fairness, Sunderland have been on a great run as well. So it's kind of, we're due a maybe slightly poorer performance and result. So they drew 1-1 against Millwall. Ahmad was kept pretty quiet for most of the game, but he does have an opportunity to get back in the spotlight this week, because on Wednesday, at the same time as United play Leeds, actually, Sunderland have their FA Cup replay against Fulham at home at Stadium Alight, which will, I'm sure, okay, be bouncing for that. And yeah, Ahmad impressed last time against Fulham, so hopefully he can do the same again. Alvaro Fernandez has really fallen out of favour at Preston over the last few weeks. Robbie Brady, the former Burnley and Norwich sort of left winger slash left wing back slash left back.
And Manchester United.
Yeah, and former academy player. He was out injured for a little bit in December and January. Fernandes kind of kept his place, but Robbie Brady has taken that wing back spot back from him, and Fernandes hasn't played much then. So just got 10 minutes for Preston as they lost to Bristol City.
I think that was the case at the start of the season as well, that Brady was starting games and Fernandes was coming off the bench. And then he managed to kind of wrestle away that starting spot. So
yeah, he started pretty much every game after the World Cup in sort of end of December until about the 20th of January. And since then, he hasn't started.
Yeah, I would say it's equally good experience to try and fight for your position back as it is to play the games.
Yeah, and listen, part of those players going out on loan isn't, obviously game time is a big one, but it's also about experience in being part of a first team squad and learning from players like Robbie Brady, who's, you know, been around for donkey's years.
Yeah.
In slightly better news for a United fullback, Ethan Laird returned from injury. Remember a few weeks ago, there were worries he might be out for a long time with a muscle injury. He did come back and play the full 90 minutes for QPR against Huddersfield.
Hannibal, talk to me. I heard some good things.
Yeah, he played really well. He came on at half-time for Birmingham. They beat Swansea 4-3 at the weekend. And Hannibal got the assist for their winning goal in the 97th minute straight from a corner.
Yeah. And they'd only equalised in the 90th minute. And just to make matters better, because this is typical Hannibal, he was booked a minute after getting the assist. I don't actually know what that was for, but it seems pretty pretty.
I mean, it's properly on brand.
There we go. Excessive celebration.
Yeah. Not unsurprising, to be honest.
Good man.
And then the three new loanies that have just gone out on loan for United that we've mentioned throughout January, Charlie Savage, Charlie McNeil and Deshaun Bernard. Charlie Savage wasn't actually in the squad for the Forest Green game, but I've got two sort of random manager tidbits for you. On Charlie Savage on loan at Forest Green, managed by Duncan Ferguson, played against Peterborough, managed by Darren Ferguson. So we had Duncan Ferguson against Darren nice. Ferguson. And then for Portsmouth, do you know, you might have seen this on Twitter because he had some quotes recently. Do you know the name of the Portsmouth manager where Deshaun Bernard has gone on loan?
No, because Danny and Nicky Cowley got sacked. I can't remember who replaced them. Oh, is it fake, fake Mourinho?
Yeah, exactly. It's English Mourinho. So it's not Jose Mourinho, it's John Mucinio, manager of Portsmouth. So Deshaun Bernard started and played the entire 90 minutes for Portsmouth against Barnsley. English Jose Mourinho was very impressed with Barnard's performance. He had a lot of good things to say about him after the game. Barnard played at right back instead of his usual centre back because Portsmouth had got some injuries there. And yeah, John Mucinio, I would say Jose Mourinho, John Mucinio was very, very, had a lot of praise for Barnard after the game, saying how well he played, especially in the second half, and was just praising his versatility and how well he can do it right back. So expect him to get a few more minutes
there. Just interrupt. I think Bernard wanted a championship loan because he did well at Hull City last season. He fell out of favour with they had a change manager halfway through and fell out of favour a bit, but he had done really well. He got player of the month, possibly, definitely for Hull City. He was in a couple of team of the weeks and team of the months for in the Football League as well. But Portsmouth will be good. And it's good because at Hull he was in kind of an underperforming team, and at Portsmouth he's in a slightly better, not perfect, hence they've sat their managers before, but a team that's like pushing for promotion, so it's a slightly different challenge. And there's another centre back as well that's gone under the radar a bit because he wasn't playing for ages, but Will Fisher at Hibernian has just started getting himself into the team every week for Hibernian, played 90 minutes again and played really well against St Mirren in a 1-0 win in the Scottish Premiership.
Yeah, and then the only other one was Charlie McNeil. He started against Swindon for Newport, played 70 minutes, didn't have the most impact on the game. It was a relatively quiet day, but good at least that he got the start on his first appearance for Newport. Expecting some good things for Charlie McNeil down at Newport. I think it's a good opportunity for him. You know, playing in League Two, I think he could really have a good second half of the season.
Final ones. Andre Masny went to Portadown in Northern Ireland. He made his debut at the weekend. And Maxi Oyedele at Altrincham was joined late on in the window by Sonny Aljafri, who I mentioned earlier, and Joe Hugel, who are on a slightly new form of loan where they will keep training with United. They're still allowed to play for United under 21s, but they can also play for Altrincham in the National League, which is really interesting, really good for all three of them. We'll see how that goes. It's a really interesting one to keep track of. As for United women, highly frustrating Sunday afternoon for them at Lee Sports Village, held to a 0-0 draw by Everton and thereby dropping off the top of the table as Chelsea, inspired by ex-red Lauren James's stunning solo goal, beat Tottenham 3-2 away from home. Everton, a much improved side compared to recent seasons, but this result does feel like a defeat for United, who hit the post and the crossbar but couldn't convert chances despite a wealth of attacking talent. Plenty of criticism for the manager Mark Skinner after this game. There has been in a section of the team support for several months, actually, including members of that core Barmy Army group who are at every game. They believe he's not getting enough out of the squad, shown a bit too much favouritism to certain players, but United are second and very much in the title race, and will hopefully finish in the magic top three to secure Champions League qualification. It's a really interesting one, the kind of debate around Mark Skinner there. And we'll try to speak to someone about that soon, either Andy Slater from the Fanzine, who's been before, or Adam Millington, the freelance women's football reporter. So we'll get them on soon to have a bit of a deep dive into that. Right, Leeds. Jesse Marsh has been sacked as Leeds manager just before we started recording this. That does change things. Former United assistant, or at least coach, Chris Armas is going to be taking charge of them, we think, for at least the Wednesday game, possibly the Sunday game as well. Regardless, let's try and put that to one side because it's otherwise quite difficult to preview this at all. But it's a bit of a worry the new manager bounce, but let's leave that because we can't predict that. In general, I think this will be very different to our previous games against Leeds. We haven't played them for, I think, about a year. They were good in transitions. We were better in transitions. Now United are showing some actual control over games, and we need to do that again. But I hope that we're going to see a more dominant United display against Leeds this time around.
I mean, definitely at home. You know, Leeds are always a little bit of a strange team to play, because even if you want to be like on paper, this definitely should be the kind of game where United are coming in dominating pretty much from the off, you know, with not too much trouble coming the other way. But just the way that Leeds approaches, the way that Leeds approach games don't really allow for that. Like even in games when we've beaten Leeds really comfortably, as we have done a couple of times since they've come back to the Premier League, they haven't been games where you'd say United were dominating in the way that we dominated for the first 70 minutes against Palace. It's always a little bit different to that. It's always a little bit more helter-skelter.
But we are much better now.
We are much better now. And obviously, Chris Armas coming in, maybe they will change and look to be a little bit more risk-averse with the sort of temporary manager in charge. You don't know, but you've got to imagine the game at Old Trafford will be relatively comfortable, and then we'll have probably a much bigger task on our hands going to Elland Road at the weekend.
Because Leeds are rubbish, but the problem is they're rubbish against poor teams and they're causing the big sides a problem.
I mean, their only away win all season was at Anfield. And I know that's not as difficult as it has been in previous seasons, but still not nothing.
Still, yeah. No team's got fewer points away from home this season than Leeds, but three of those were picked up at Anfield, which I think is, yeah, it's a small example, but I do think it tells a wider story that they do cause big teams problems because they can pick you off on the counter-attack.
Yeah.
But they're not a good team, and as losing to Forest show.
Especially, they're not a good team. The player that worries me in this game is Nonto, who has been brilliant for the last month or so.
They've got loads of players that can worry you, like Harrison and Aronson. Unintended to link those two names together, but they are good players, and there's no doubt about that. But and they've made a couple of good signings as well in Weston McKennie and Mark Rocker and Geronimo Rutter. And
I know I don't think we've ever really covered this, but Mark Rocker was your United pick a couple of years ago. I remember that, and actually he's played really quite well for Leeds this season.
Yeah, I'd completely forgotten that. Was it Espanyol he was at? It shows
at that point, but then he went to Bayern, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He was at Espanyol when you first mentioned him, and then he went to Bayern, and now he's in Leeds.
God. I completely forgotten about that. I basically forgotten who he was, but it shows you how ridiculous kind of transfer talk is. You can't pick people. There are people paid to do that, and it's not us. In terms of how we approach this, you want to control it. But I think this is one of those games where Ten Hag's spoken a lot recently about rest defence, which is, I think, a pretty foreign term in English football that is a little difficult to understand because the term rest here is associated with kind of sleeping rather than what you leave behind, which is what it's meant to mean. He's translated it from German. It basically means the players left behind in defence when you have the ball and you're on the attack, the ones who are ready to defend in those seconds after you lose the ball. United's been much better recently, and Ten Hag's spoken about that. This is one of those games where it will need to be very good because Leeds will counter-attack and do it very quickly. So yeah, it's interesting. I think they are really there to be got at.
Yeah, 100%. This feels like the kind of game where if United score in the first 15 minutes, we could run up the scoreline pretty heavily.
Yeah, here. Well, we've done it before.
Well, yeah, exactly. It could go a different way. I think if this goes 0-0 at half-time or, you know, the game could get a little bit uncomfortable, but you can't really look at this game and predict anything other than quite a comfortable United win, really, based on the form of the two teams recently.
It's probably the most confident you've been going into a game.
I mean, I just...
At least from what you're saying there.
I wouldn't say it's like the most confident. Is that what you feel? I mean, like I've also been very confident for games against people like Forest recently, but you just... It's at home, at the moment, I'm confident against anyone, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
I you know, if we do an episode before the away game, I'd probably sing a very different tune. But at home,
they're very.
I think we should
games,
comfortably
yeah.
win.
Yeah, I think we should. I watched Pascal Strijk play at left back against Forest, and he was terrible. We should be targeting him in a big way, big way. But yeah, we really should get them. I think it's worth remembering last season as well, because it's a fairly similar time. These games as the away game at Elland Road, for all the shit that we endured, including against City and Liverpool, it did help. Our two games against Leeds were just absolutely immense. 5-1 at home to start the season, and then that absolute crack of a 4-2 away, which was before we went to Madrid. Interesting that, as with last season, it's a trip to Elland Road before an immensely difficult European tie away to a Spanish heavyweight just a few days later. Because I remember landing in Alicante en route to Madrid to see the Atleti game. I flew there instead of to Madrid because it was cheaper and picked up a copy of either Marca or AS And I dug out the section on the Premier League to see the report on that game. It was a big picture of Harry Maguire kind of running away in the Elland Road rain. And I sat in the sun waiting for a train to Madrid with a little portion of Tapa and a little caño of cerveza and a report on Manchester United 4, Leeds United 2. And it was absolute bliss. And this time it'll be to Barcelona. This time, ironically, I'll be flying to Madrid direct and getting the train from there, which is very silly. But hopefully I'll have exactly the same buzz this time, having beaten Leeds twice rather than just once. And that's probably an appropriate way to end. Jack, for more from you throughout the week and your immediate reaction to the Leeds game, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.